How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Hello, listeners, and welcome again to A Tale of Two Hygienists with Michelle and Andrew. This is Michelle. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, hello.
Did you,
you like that?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You're very excited.
I sang for that. Mm-hmm.
Did y'all miss me last week?
Yeah,
Comcast will not hold me back.
Freaking Comcast.
Honestly.
We had so much feedback about how much everyone missed you. We had thousands and thousands of letters.
I wrote them all. My hand hurts. Actually, I couldn't practice this week. My hand hurts so much.
Yeah. It was a rough one. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about like when I'm doing the episode without you or the intros without you, I feel so weird. Like I feel like I'm just, I should be talking to myself. Yeah, I really am. And it's not nearly as interesting.
I definitely think that we made a good decision having co-host, like, being a team versus because the podcast that is just one person, like Carrie, like for instance, when she's just
doing her intro. We love you, Carrie.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about. So I was a guest on her podcast.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Do you know I listened to it?
Thank you for your support there.
Well, I just want to let you and Carrie, because I know Carrie listens to our show. I subscribed on iTunes to your podcast. And so I listened to it and it was really good. I think I told you this kind of off air also, but you guys are like very, very professional and it was really kind of different.
I thought it was great. And we were all over the place, but it was really fun. And
see, I didn't think you guys were all over the place at all. I felt like you guys were very narrowed into Tepe and kind of representing what you know.
Yeah. I love Tepe. I hope that everybody knows that now.
It came across pretty loud and clear.
Yeah,
and I love Tepe too, even though I don't have any affiliations with them. And I did recommend it to my patient the other day. I wrote it down on a little card and gave them and said, hey, this isn't going to be as great because you don't have a professional that's going to size it for you, but you can go to Amazon and get some of the smaller sizes.
There you go.
Do you know, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about this little thing that I saw that, you've probably seen it. Okay. Let me back up. I don't know anything about implants. Okay. So now we've established that.
Like every good hygienist.
Exactly.
I do natural
teeth. So, yeah, only natural teeth. If you have an implant, it's not true. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen lots of implants, but I feel like there's like a standard implant. And I don't know, you just have your crown that sits on top of it and you're good to go. Well, this one, he had tried to do like gum grafting and all that kind of stuff and just wasn't working. And so with the actual crown itself, there was like this little like pink acrylic at the very top of it. And it was gross looking to me because it wasn't very flush along the gingival margins at all. And so I felt like all the food was going to get caught in up underneath there. It felt like, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, the PFMs obviously have a larger margin, like when we're trying to scale around them and stuff like that. It was a very, very exaggerated, that type of margin where it was just like a huge undercut. And then there's a little bit of open space, you know, where the embrasure should be because it was number 9 and number 10.
Oh.
And it just looked terrible.
That's such a bummer. I mean, that's just such a hard, I mean, as a dentist, I'm sure like to get that just right aesthetically, I would have a hard time sleeping at night. Like I would be so worried because that's such a hard area. But did you teach them to clean circumferentially around the implant?
I did my best to try and explain it without having any brushes to demonstrate. Well,
but so some of those, which you should come to my lecture in Scottsdale and learn how to maintain dental implants. Because
so if we want to do a Kickstarter to pay for me to go down there, then let's do that.
A GoFundMe.
GoFundMe.
My continuing education account.
Yes.
I have a friend who I know will not ever hear this, and she would probably die if she knew that I thought poorly of this decision. But she was like, I need braces because my lower anterior teeth, not her lower, she was saying my bottom teeth are a little crooked and they sit on, you know, one on top of each other and my wisdom back molars are pushing them all forward. And she did a GoFundMe. And I was like, there's people that don't eat. Like there's kids that literally don't eat at night. And so sometimes I find it, I know the GoFundMe is like, whatever, just, you could, it can be whatever it wants to be, but I don't know. I'm like, I'm not donating to you getting, I mean, and if you see in the picture, like I got patients that look so much worse than her. Just have some pretty front and bottom teeth. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's not a necessity. It's really not.
So let me make a comment real quick about what you just did. Mm-hmm. When you just said, well, she said not my lower anterior, she said my lower front teeth or whatever. Do you remember like when you're doing your podcast with Carrie?
Yeah.
And she's like, hold on, we need to break this down for the consumer.
Yep.
And I was biofilm, like, that's so hard.
Oh yeah.
To talk especially like a normal person,
especially on a podcast. Like when I joke, like I need to use my words. It's different when you can like demonstrate or draw a diagram or show your illustrations, but then to like think of the words that would be best to describe like biofilm and how to make a C shape or I had to think harder.
Yeah.
I hate when I have to do that.
Yeah, that was, it was funny. I was laughing because only because I know you and I understand how, like, how hard it was. You're so clinical and you're such a teacher, you know, and you're used to teaching to people that can speak the language. So it was funny. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was a good podcast
that was
though.
Fun. Oh, thanks.
Carrie does a good job interviewing.
Yeah, she did. She did. And that's why back to our original, going to regress a little bit. I don't know how she does it by herself. Like it's nice to have a partner in crime because even though I thought you did a great job intro for by yourself.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah. There are some things I shouldn't say. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it anyways. I tried to make a joke about the whole UK thing. It just didn't come off. Like when I was listening to it later, I was just like, you know, it's not funny because I didn't have anyone to play off of it wasn't even necessarily like you weren't there to play off of, but you didn't laugh at my stupid joke about it.
To
be like racist. Oh, you laugh at my jokes all the time. See? And then so it's, I don't know. It just, it didn't work out. I listened to it. I'm like, that was so stupid. And then I edited that too. So you'd think that I would know better and take it out during editing. I never did. And I'm just like, whatever, just put it out there. It'll be fine. So, hey, can I, let me take a break for a second from our podcast and just address one of our listeners in particular. Oh. Hey, Cassie, how's the drive to work? Cause I know you listen to us, you know, every time you go to work and I hope your drive's going well. And I hope maybe some of those other podcast suggestions, worked out for you.
Oh yeah. That's, the one that we made, suggestions for. What some of our favorites?
Yeah, she's the best. She's great. She's one of our biggest fans, I would say, because she's always like putting our stuff out there to other people and stuff.
Yeah,
so
much appreciated. We appreciate the shares. That's nice.
Oh yeah. But just like trying to start a conversation. And for anyone else that's in the lighthearted group, I'm not trying to bash on you, but I'll tell you what, you guys need to freaking get with it when it comes to podcasting because she put a thing about like, hey, what podcast do you listen to? And no one answered except for us. And like, we're not the only podcast geeks out. Well, we might be, but it's just like,
if she had wrote on there, What kind of podcast do you listen to while having sex? I bet that one would have gotten a lot of feedback.
And I guarantee anything. We would not be on there as our podcast. It would not be A Tale of Two Hygienists with Andrew and Michelle. That is like the birth control of podcasts.
Yeah. How not to have kids. Off. Listen to yes. Andrew and Michelle. Yeah, but if there is any of comments about sex, I mean, those are like the top ones. It baffles me. It baffles me.
And there's a whole libido group too, like a secret group that, yeah. So all the stuff that you see on the main page is like the toned down, tame stuff.
That's where I'm going to
start. So I like that group. Dang it. I mean, I know I talk about them a lot, but I just, people are active on there and that it's not so just true. Sex. Let's be honest. It's not sex
no,
always.
It's not. But I think that's what comes across. Maybe it's the time of day I check my Facebook and like, that's all I see. I did see the other day, and I actually was asking, I want to know what group this is. It's so damn rude. On Facebook, somebody said, I saw this in another thing, you know, that other group that is rude and mean. I was like, which group is this on Facebook? I think I'm a part. Yeah. I guess I don't, I'm pretty sure like Lighthearted blows up my newsfeed and I don't see any other groups post. Or I'm just scrolling through them so fast because I'm like, all right, if I want to have a day other than looking at Facebook, I have to scroll through to get to the important stuff. But
I feel like Lighthearted is faster paced than some of the other groups. I'm in those other groups too, but, I'll tell you off air what the other group is, but they're a terrible group. I mean, a great group. I'm sure they're doing well for our profession, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's just everybody's kind of cutthroat and very. Jump down your throat if they don't like what you're doing or saying. Get on your butt about it. That sucks.
Can I tell you another thing about my week? It has nothing to do with podcasting or dental hygiene necessarily, but you know, I was traveling a lot, right? So I did, I think I ended up doing about 70 hours this week. I thought I was going to be doing more, but I ended up getting out like at 5:30. I mean, a little bit early on most of my days. So it was pretty nice, but. I went up to Allison's grandma's house to like spend the night because she lives in Seattle and I was working pretty much in Seattle. And, she has these beds that are probably from the '50s and they're like, you know, like in the movies, like when you see like the old timey beds and like the mom and dad slept in separate beds. Whatever. I think it was like one of those little twin beds and my feet hang off the edge of it, but it is like, I don't know. They have my sleep number. It's like the perfect like hardness or whatever. And then grandma's got all these quilts that she made. And I mean, grandma's 93, maybe 90.
Oh, wow.
She's up there in years, but she lives by herself. And it's like a 2-story house and she gets up and down the stairs. I mean, she is awesome. So, you know, I don't know. I feel bad now because my wife's going to way outlive me if she has her grandma's genes. So, but anyways, I got the best sleep. And so I went there on Wednesday night and slept there. And I also went there on Friday night and slept there. And I, for working 70 hours, I have so much energy right now. I am so excited. Oh, yeah.
You think it's the bed in Seattle?
That's the only one. So I said, and you know, I'm very sure she doesn't listen to this podcast. And I'm very sure that my in-laws extended family do not listen to this podcast. But when she dies, that's what I want.
Getting that one?
I don't care about anything else that she has at all except for the bed.
That means you're going to have where you're going to start sleeping in separate beds then?
Yeah. Yeah. I told her, I was like, we're going to have to clear out the closet and put that bed in there because I'm sleeping on it. And that's just the way it's going to be. And I'm sorry. I was like, we're done having kids anyways. Right. So like, yeah,
no I would problem. Totally sleep in. Well, that's not true. I am, a heat seeking missile when I sleep. If I, so the awesome. Moment I get cold and so, you know, like now we're all decently have some kind of money. So when we go on vacations, we can afford not to have 16 people in a hotel room. But when my friends and I would like have to like be 4 or 5 and we're, you know, 2 in a bed, my best friend, she would literally put a pillow barrier between us because I will 100% try to snuggle with you. Like my feet. Seek warmth, something. I'm going to invade your personal space. And
so, weird.
So poor Ryan. I have woken up on the opposite side of the bed before because me and Lola have pushed Ryan out on his side and he has had to get up and go to the other side of the bed to sleep.
Freaking Ryan. I'm so sorry, man. You put up with so much and you are just a saint.
Hey, why does everyone say that? But yeah, he does. He puts up a lot of my shenanigans.
Yeah. And let's make a note. It's about 15 minutes into this episode so far and you haven't swore.
I think I said damn.
I mean, did you?
I think so.
I don't know that I have to bleep that out though. So, I mean, if I had a bell to ring, good job. You would get it.
I get a gold star.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, you do.
And gosh, it's Easter, like it's been a long time. I shouldn't be cussing.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't change anything. You know what? Last week, do you remember we talked? Well, we kind of tried to talk. I mean, you were having some Comcast issues or whatever, but we talked about having like a religious episode. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Gosh, I still want to do that.
Because I got a little pissy with, I said, I no longer want to be called a Christian. I just want to be a good person that believes in Christ. I don't want to be called a Christian anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can go into this for another hour probably, but, if any of our listeners want to talk about religion and not in a bashing kind of way, but just want to talk about it because I've also had some different thoughts lately. So I am LDS. I am Mormon, practicing, believing everything. I mean, I'm not going to change. I'm not that much removed from it, but I had some thoughts last night as I was walking my dog and I was just like, you know, I have a problem with labels. I don't like being labeled either. Mm-hmm. And so it's just something maybe we talk about. It would have nothing to do with hygiene and it'd probably be like a bonus episode or something. And
a big disclaimer at the front
and being like, hey, turn this off if you are going to get offended about religion. But
we could have my pastor come on that does the Bad Christian podcast.
Oh, that'd be sweet. That'd be really fun, actually.
I think he would love it.
Let's set that up because that'd be really fun.
I can do that. So you said that you had like this thought. I had a little epiphany this week, actually, myself about dental hygiene. Actually, it was after our last interview, which was Cindy Kleiman, and she said something in the podcast like, I wasn't meant to scale. I was, you know, kind of meant to do what she's doing, which is in the hospitals and, you know, teaching nurses how to care for, you know, ICU patients, oral conditions. And so she was like, I wasn't meant to scale. I was meant to do this. And I was like, you know, there are so many times that I have said, like, I have graduated students where I'm just like, crap, they're not good scalers. They're not good clinicians. And they're going to be my colleague. And that's so unfortunate. But, you know, I'm going to change my tune a little bit because I think they're probably going to be good at something. And instead of like I don't mean that.
Podcasting. Or is that what they're going to go into is podcasting?
No, I'm saying like, there's probably some that are great writers. There's probably some that are going to be great teachers. There's going to be, some that are going to be like us. They're going to be doing something outside of the box. Maybe they're going into the nursing homes. Maybe they're doing public health. Maybe they're going to be like the inventor of some crazy new product because, I mean, maybe they're going to be like Deborah where they like make scrubs that are magic, you know?
Right, right.
So I'm going to change my tune and not be such like a, because, you know, when I think about it, you know, perio is my thing. I love perio. Mm-hmm. And even what I think I love the most about perio, and I think a combination of Cindy's interview and hearing Carrie's podcast and what I get excited about, which is patient education. Like that's what I love the most about it. And I love scaling, but I don't like when I have to spend 10 minutes per tooth, I'm like, ugh. But that's perio. You need to be spending like a decent amount of time to scale a diseased tooth. And that's not like the highlight of my day. The highlight of my day is like doing the OHI for a patient. So I just had an epiphany.
That's a good epiphany. Let me tell you a story that goes along with that little epiphany and why I think that you are right on. You would not. So the people that you're talking about that you're graduating that are not good, that's me. So I am that person you had been frustrated with. There was an instructor. I have a lot of respect for her. Even back then I did as well. I'm not going to say her name. I know she'll never listen to the podcast anyways. Because
you have a lot of hope for the people who are going to listen to our podcast. Like pretty much. Well, have you mentioned one person that's going to listen to our podcast?
My dad, sorry. My dad listens to it.
Okay.
What's up, Dad? Thank you for supporting your boy.
Yeah. Thanks.
I meant it like your son, boy, not like your boy, your homie, but whatever. Anyways.
Thanks for clarifying.
So yeah, cause my dad's hood. So, anyways, so there's this instructor, right? And I remember it was my junior year, and I was kind of transitioning junior to senior year, I think. And I mean, I made her cry a couple of times because
I made these instructor cry.
Yeah.
How do you make an instructor cry?
Because I was a little bit. Well, I'm me. I don't know. I'm a big guy. I'm scary. I don't know. The words I say are me. No.
You're like, you give me that A. You saw calculus nowhere in this mouth, lady.
Well, that did not work because I did not get the best of grades at the very beginning. The first year I didn't do very well. The second year I did much better. But I guarantee she just did not have any hope for me at that point. She's just like, he's going to be really terrible. Now come to find out, I graduated in 2009. So it's been seven years or whatever. And, I am lucky enough to be on a committee with, I don't know how much I can actually say, but with a certain testing agency and say a subcommittee of a committee about restorative work and bringing certain things, you know, certain qualifications and whatever to their testing, whatever. Anyways, whatever. And come to find out that this instructor and another instructor from my old school are some of these people on the subcommittees. There's only like 10 of us total in the whole entire world on the subcommittee.
And they're on there.
And it happens to be them also. And so it's funny how it kind of comes full circle. And then with my position with the state, you know, I get to work with these same types of people also. And it's just like, you know, I guarantee that they would never have thought like Andrew's going to be the one out of all of our students that's going to be doing this. When I was falling asleep in class and I was, you know, walking out of my pharmacology class because I was so angry at the instructor. And wow. I mean, I was angry person. I don't know what was going on.
Wow.
But I was just,
you're a pleasure, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, I think it all depends too, though. Like if you treat me with respect, then, you know, I'll give you respect back, but I question a lot of things. Like, why do we do that? Why is it like that? And I feel like some people get defensive when that comes rather than like, even though it is supposed to be a learning environment.
Right.
I'd be like, but why? And a lot of people didn't have the answers that I was looking for.
No, I think that's, I think that it makes for a good profession, a professional when you do question. And I kind of am the same way. I might not enjoy the act of whatever you're making me do but if I understand the why, like it makes sense in my head to do it, I'll just do it and not complain about it. But if you make me do something and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like if I feel like I'm being counterproductive in any way or not efficient with my time, I will cause such a fuss. Like that's why when the assistants, the one time they were like, we have to double run these instruments because it was an HIV patient. I was like, I'm sorry, come again. What do we have to do? So they made, because I can't, they were, it, the instruments were in the ultrasonic. So they were going to drain the ultrasonic afterwards and refill it. But I came in and threw my instruments in there, not knowing that, you know, they were having to make this special like task for this one patient. And they're like, no, we have to drain it and refill it and then run these twice. And I was like, why? Now, and they're like, now you have to do your instruments like that too. I was like, there's not a chance in all the world I'm doing this. There's not a chance.
Right.
Like, if you think for one moment, whatever we're doing on a daily basis is not keeping our next patient safe from HIV or tuberculosis or whatever, then we need to stop, close this place down and reassess what we're doing because it doesn't make sense. Like that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So it was like a huge fuss. And they're like, this is what we've always done. I'm like, and those are the most dangerous words ever
said. I hate that.
This is what we've always done. Why?
Yep. Yep. I made a lot of enemies because of.
We would not work well together. We would probably piss a lot of people.
Well, and I have. I mean, I've made so many enemies, I think, in my career just by saying, but, you know, by asking questions like that, but why? But why do we do it that way? And what's, you know, well, it's because we've always done it that way. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't make it right though. And we have a, you know, we have company standards and company rules and company this and that and the other. And, you know, a lot of the people that I pissed off is because like I'm a company man. I will follow the company rules and letters almost to a T. But other people don't get it. They don't get why we do what we do. And so when I say that's not why we do it, we do it a different way, then anyways, they get busy. Anyway, so you had an article though that you wanted to share on the intro. Sorry, I went off on a whole tangent. I shouldn't have went there, but whatever.
Now everybody's like, never work with Michelle and Andrew.
Yeah, like they're just so mean and angry people.
If you want some change in your office, then you bring us in.
Oh yeah, bring us in. We'll stir up all sorts of trouble.
You know, so, okay. Sorry, we're going to digress one more time before I go through this article. So I was listening to the podcast Dental Hacks. They were interviewing Chris Salerno, Dr. Chris Salerno. He's the editor for Dental Economics. And they mentioned in that, like, they would love to go in to an office and do like a reality show, like go in and like revamp it and almost like Bar 911 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I compare it to the hair with Tabitha's Takeover on Bravo.
No
or
clue
something.
What you're talking about.
Well, she goes in and she like, she does it for hair salons and she's busting heads and taking names. Like she's not messing around. I was like, I want to do that. But also Kristen, Hodgson said the same thing when she was on our podcast. Like she wishes she could go in and just like, just take over, like change, show everybody what they're doing wrong and then help them. I think there's a market for that. We need to figure out how to do that.
Well, I mean, sometimes you do have to kind of torch it to the ground and rebuild it completely rather than just putting it back up on those, you know, shambly little, you know, understructure, support structure that it has. So,
well, they were saying the reason that they don't think it would happen is because there'd be a whole lot of OSHA violations happening. Like they would be fined left and right. But I think that's the case for any place. Like, salons have OSHA and DHEC violations, don't they? I'm pretty sure they do. Anyway,
couldn't tell you.
Ran off on a tangent. Okay, so you ready?
Last time I was in a salon, I couldn't tell you. So.
Do you just buzz your own head? Do you make your wife do it?
No, she won't do it. But let's get to the article because I could tell you a whole other story about that.
All right. Okay, so you ready? This I saved this just for us because we had when I think this was back in December that we had this conversation. So the article is RDH magazine. Administering dermal fillers, freaky or fabulous? Nevada's surprise decision led to Facebook debate. Do you remember our little conversation about Botox and fillers?
And I also remember if I was like, is it Nevada or Nevada? Nevada? Nevada. I said that on the podcast. Anyways.
Do you say Nevada?
I don't remember what I say now because I think I say Nevada, but I think that might be wrong.
Potato.
You know what it's like? Hold on, before we get any more. I was down in the Dominican Republic. I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast or not, but I keep thinking about it. Debridement or debridement?
Debridement.
No, it's debridement. I had a doctor down there. Ryan, what's up, man? This is your 15 minutes of glory right here. We were sitting in the airport coming back and he was telling me about this. I'm like, no, you're full of crap, man. I don't care if you're a doctor. And he's like, no, you need to listen to it. And so I went on all sorts of websites to try and find where they would say debridement. It's not debridement, it's debridement. It's always debridement. 100 bajillion % of the time, except for in dentistry. We kind of make up our own thing.
How to pronounce debridement, YouTube.
Yeah, see if you can play it. See?
Damn, it is debridement.
Right? And it'll say like UK version and American version.
Debridement. Oh man.
It's freaking debridement. I know. And it kills me every time. And I went down to Guatemala afterwards and I had a whole little discussion about that and yada, yada. Anyways, sorry. Nevada. Before that, dermal fillers.
Debridement,
okay. Continue
debridement.
On.
Man, I feel like my whole life is a lie.
I'm sorry, listeners. I've screwed that up for everyone. Actually, Ryan Gens. Ryan, you were the one that did that.
Great. Well, I learned something new today. All right. So this pretty much was just talking about the whole hygienist giving Botox and dermal fillers. And, it is saying, according to Karen Soli, a past president of ADHA and one of the dental hygienists on the Nevada board, It all came about unexpectedly, there we go, at a dental board meeting. No planning by either association. The education requirements are now being considered by the state dental board. I mean, that's kind of fun, like something like this came about and nobody had an intention to do that.
Sure.
I think that's funny because it takes so long to pass certain things in some states.
Yeah.
And you just show up and you're like, let's all give Botox. So pretty much it started like this crazy debate. I'll read you some of these quotes off of Facebook. One of them, it said, if there wasn't a need for change, we'd still be just polishing teeth. Why wouldn't you want to expand your duties? I think it would be awesome if we could add more to our list of duties. It would take us away from the monotony of doing prophies and perio maintenance, and it could save us or give us a chance to work in a different setting. Why not embrace this? One was, why wouldn't you want your dentist to administer Botox or fillers? Who else would you want to fix your gummy smile and the black triangles in your smile line? Which was what my side of it was. Like, why wouldn't you fix that gummy smile? Like, aren't we the best people?
Right.
Then it was, registered nurses can do it, but dental hygienists who have much more head and neck training are not allowed to. I have always been incredulous that RNs are allowed to do this. It's about time. Oral surgeons do chin and cheek implants for decades. Orthodontists offer teeth realignment for cosmetic reasons. Why not this? And then.
Well, hold on. I'll tell you why not, because those are both specialists who went to a lot more school than we did. That's a stupid argument.
Well, those are surgeries.
Sorry, continue on.
Well, those are surgeries, yeah, but, and more stuff. Like, we give injections. Why wouldn't you give
injections? Gosh, it's
so different. Sorry, and it's reversible, on. Though.
Okay.
It's reversible. Let's see, there were some that were like really against it. Where do I go find those guys?
Which I think is me, and I wrote all of them about how against it. Well, okay, so now that we've had some time to think about it, because I think you were kind of more leaning towards pro and I was leaning towards con.
Yeah.
And so as I thought more and more about it, and I thought about it from your guys' side, I really got to the point where I am just even further entrenched in my opposition against it. I can't
Why?
See how that, to me, it's just so demeaning. I understand that, yes, let's add responsibilities, but let's add responsibilities that's actually going to be teeth and dentally related. I just don't think that.
Do you think whitening is demeaning? I mean, that's fully cosmetic.
It has to do with your teeth.
Yeah, but if you're filling the nasolabial folds, if you're fixing that gummy smile, it's all cosmetic.
Let the doctors do it.
It's
the doctors
all
do that.
Cosmetic. But it's not like you as a hygienist can do this without having a educated doctor, dentist. Like, you have to be under that doctor that's also educated in Botox. And I agree. If it's like nurses are doing, they're not, that's kind of a different direction for nurses. It's cosmetic. They're not saving lives.
Yeah, if you all want to do it, go ahead.
Putting IVs.
But I just,
see,
I don't, I'm still against it.
Yeah. I think that it is not something that I would do. I am not a hygienist that would work in a spa-like setting, dental office. That wouldn't be my thing. Like, the idea of putting hand warmers on and like just making it so peaceful and quiet and having, and I love aromatherapy. I have like diffusers all over my house. I would not want to work in that environment. That's just not me. I want to work in a more clinical, surgical, beat in your head. Like, we have to have health. And it's not like this most relaxing setting, but there's nothing wrong with that spa setting. It's just a different place to go, like different place to be treated. So it's kind of like this, I think, with Botox. I personally probably would not be the one doing it because I want to be in a very perio, get you back to your oral health, a very strict kind of office. Mm-hmm. But why not for that cosmetic office that is purely like just doing full on reconstructions? Why not?
I would have to look and see how the workflow would be. So how does a hygienist being able to do that make it worth the doctor's time to let the hygienist do that instead? I don't know how much it costs, which is maybe a big factor.
Oh,
but
I'd say,
why not a dentist should be able to just do it real quick. They'd be much more efficient. You'd do 20 minutes to 30. I don't know how long it takes either, but
I think it would be
20 minutes in the chair and you're done.
I think it takes 5 minutes at the most, and you can make $250 in a 5 minute time period.
So why would you bog down your hygienist schedule? I just don't understand why a hygienist has to do that and why a doctor couldn't do it.
Why do hygienists do whitening? It bogs down your schedule too. And they're in your chair for 30 minutes.
See, and I don't know. I've never been in a setting where I did the whitening. It's always been under doctor's chairs.
I have never really, but until this moment where I temped and it was always tacked on to the back of my hygiene schedule. Like at the end, but it was then overlapped with, so I would go into another room, start another patient, and then the assistant would finish it for me kind of thing.
Yeah. And so I guess I can understand that where someone else is finishing the work.
Yeah.
Like a dentist finishing the Botox work after the cleaning.
Okay, so what about if you had a geriatric patient that was like full denture case and they were getting constant like candidiasis and then those nasolabial folds? To put a filler there to prevent that from happening, wouldn't that be something?
I absolutely want them to have that. And I'm glad doctors can do that.
So your beef is not so much with Botox in a dental office. It's with who is providing it.
Yeah. I mean, I still understand why would a hygienist want to be the person that provides that service? I just don't get it.
I don't know why are you doing fillings when the doctor can do that?
Because I can do more fillings with the doctor. It's like having an associate doctor. Why would an owner doctor have an associate so they can do more production?
A patient and literally at the end of your appointment, you just threw in some fillers that took 5 minutes. You don't think that would be a nice $250 added to your chair time?
Probably would.
I'd
have to see it.
Yeah. I think you're thinking this is taking up a whole, like, you know, hour appointment or something. Like it's not, I don't think it would be something where you are adding this person in, like go run in there and give this person Botox. It's probably that they're sitting in your chair and then you're just it's a service that you've added on.
So this is what we need to do. If anyone listens to this episode and they have a course or something that I could take for free and you guys will fly me out to change my opinion so that I can start telling our thousands of listeners
about
how it should be approved, then I'd be happy to go to this course for free on your guys' dime.
I wonder what the next states would be to adopt this. Is there any other states? I don't know. I didn't see that in this article.
I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. I don't remember either, but I honestly could just care not very much at all about this.
I would literally go to learn to do it to myself.
You're so weird.
I'm preventing wrinkles.
So we need to finish this up because this is going to be a whole episode about just us here if we don't hurry up.
All right.
So this week I'm going to be in Vegas at Townie Meeting. So everyone come see me, say hi, introduce yourself. So I'm doing the Townie Talk and I'm also doing the Hygiene Roundtable. So Thursday and Friday, we're doing stuff on both days. I think I'll post some stuff to the Facebook page this week about it. And what else are we going on? We got a lot of stuff coming up though next month.
Yeah, so it's a busy month. I fly out to Scottsdale on Friday and lecturing for Western Society of Periodontology. That's exciting.
The what was that one place that you went to down in Florida? The ICOI
Implant Congress. International Congress of Implantology.
That's the one. They had that international, what was it, the conference that was like in Barcelona or something?
Oh yeah. Thanks for rubbing that.
Gosh, that's too bad you can't go to that.
I will not be in Barcelona, sadly. No, Tepe Sweden gets that guy. The mothership of my
work on that.
Companies. One day.
Also, we haven't heard it back from any UK listeners or listener, whoever it is. So
that one person downloading in multiple towns.
Yeah. Yeah. She has a lot of towns though.
Yeah.
So write us, message us on Facebook. And also go to the iTunes review and rate us there. And that's all I have.
All right. Who's our interview?
That's a great question. We have so many of them. I haven't figured out which one we're going to do today. I'm guaranteeing that her name's going to be Cindy. I'm just not sure what her last name's going to be yet. So
that's fantastic. They're both surprise. Great episodes. So
we're going to surprise you guys when we do the intro. If we even say their name, we'll find out.
So enjoy this interview with Cindy.
So when you download the episode, and it'll actually say the name of the person that we're interviewing. So that's who it is.
It's playing
Sound good?
Russian roulette with podcast interviews.
Yeah.
Spin a wheel. Let's have one of your kids like pick a number.
So, you know what I could do is I'll be like, never mind. Let's just, enjoy the interview with Cindy.
Bye.
Have a good week.
So, we are speaking with Cindy Kleinman, and that's K-L-E-I-N-M-A-N, correct, Cindy?
No. Take that N out in the middle.
Okay, spell it for me correctly.
K-L-E-I-N-M-A-N. M-A-N. It does not have that N in the middle.
Okay, very good. So Cindy and I actually, in a roundabout way, go a way back. You came up to me when I was in Arizona at ADHA doing my poster presentation for my master thesis research on hygienists in the hospitals. And I sent you my research once it was all done and published. And then I saw you again, I think, at the Arizona State meeting last year. But I was intrigued because you work with patients in the ICU as a hygienist, correct?
Absolutely.
So you're a hygienist, obviously. How long have you been a hygienist and what's your story?
Oh, Michelle, you don't want to know the year. But let's just say I have most of my careers behind me, but how I got into hospital care was I went to the University of Pennsylvania, and the director of my program was Irene Woodall. And only older hygienists would remember that name. She started RDH magazine. She was the very first editor of that. She wrote books. She really would have been like an Esther Wilkins, except she had a brain aneurysm in her 40s. But before all of that, she was the director of my program. And as a, finishing up hygiene at the University of Pennsylvania, I told her I wanted to work in a perio office. And I guess she felt that is not the place that I should be at. I'm not sure how, I don't remember how she put it, but that's not where they wanted me to go. So she told me of a job in a rehabilitation hospital. This is back in Philadelphia, that was looking for an assistant hygienist, front office. It would be one-stop shopping, two part-time dentists and one auxiliary. And I told her I really didn't want to do that. I have no interest to do hospital care. And she said, just go meet them. And I did, and I got this job, and it turned my entire career around. And I fell in love with hospital care. And that was my start, strictly by accident. But these two doctors totally instilled in me the passion for hospital care. So that was my beginning. It wasn't a plan at all. It was a plan after Philadelphia. I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and I did not have a job to go to. There's no ads, even, back in the 80s. There's no ads for hygienists in a hospital. So I knocked on hospital doors. I knocked on their doors and told them what I could do and why they need to hire me. And lo and behold, one hospital hired me. And I was there for close to a decade. Also, a rehabilitation hospital with traumatic brain injury,
stroke, spinal cord injured patients, surgical patients. So I did that for a decade, and then Community College Hygiene Program, Phoenix College, called me and said, we have a grant, and we're going to have a grant to portable dental homebound care with one dentist, one dental assistant, and one hygienist who will work with our hygiene students and take these students out with our portable equipment to different private homes, facilities, that type of stuff. And then I got to be the one instilling in the students the passion of doing, you know, specialized care, homebound care, nursing home care. And I was very lucky. I got to do that for another decade. And then that grant ended, and I started to teach at the College of Medical Histories and Medical Emergencies, and I did that for another decade. So when you ask what year I graduated, you could do the math. So then how did I get into critical care? Again, it was an accident. Nothing I had planned, and I've worked in two rehab hospitals. I'd worked in nursing home care, homebound care. I had never worked in the world of critical care. But I got a phone call from a physician. And this physician, who knows me very well, said, our lead nurse practitioner at Barrow Neurological Institute, which is the largest neurological hospital in the world, we have a nurse practitioner here who wants to get a doctorate. She wants to study her PhD, and she wants to do her research study on oral care in the ICU. And thought it would be worthwhile having a cup of coffee with me. Would I meet her?
Well, people who know me will know if you offer me, you know, to meet me at Starbucks and you're buying, I'll be there. So I met her at Starbucks, and that was another decade ago, and I've been working in the world of critical care nursing for now also a decade, and she did get her doctorate, and it is in a thesis on oral care in the ICU, and we have been partners now for about a decade, and it is where I'm going to be ending my career, either in presentations on the topic of medical emergencies, or a presentations and consulting in the world of ICU, because it is the coolest thing I think I've ever done is work in an ICU, and that's my little story.
So, what is it that you actually go and do on a daily basis in the ICU as a hygienist?
Okay. Well, I am no longer the hygienist on the daily basis. I'll kind of tell you, we do have a hygienist now. It's no longer me. I have remained in the consulting speaking world, so I'm not there on a daily basis. So I could tell you a little bit what I do and a little bit what Sandra does. And to go back with how we started this work, let me tell you a little bit about, can I take a couple minutes to tell you about the issues in ICU oral care?
Oh, yes, please do.
To give you a little bit of background? Okay. Mainly when patients in critical care, and this is a neurological hospital, we have the largest neuro ICU in the entire world, and about 50% of this population are put on a ventilator, respirator, so they can breathe. And this puts them at very high risk for getting ventilator-associated pneumonia. A very high risk. And out of this condition, 76% of the time that when they culture, the sputum or the pneumonia. They take a sample. They found 76% of the time the flora, the bacteria that's causing this pneumonia, comes from the mouth. So this is what is the huge game changer in the role of oral care in ICU. Out of patients who get this disease, ventilator-associated pneumonia, 20 to 50 will die. So it is a very, very serious condition and very evidence-based. Research has shown how much, how high importance has to be on oral care for these patients. That's not the importance that hygienists put on it. It is the importance that nursing associations put on it. And they have established this relationship and this, how important oral care is. And actually my topics, when I speak on it, the title of my topic is Oral Care is Critical Care. And if a critical care registered nurse is not doing standard of care oral care, he or she is not doing good nursing care. It is that important. And we have, just in the United States, every single year, we have 1.6 million patients on ventilators. So this is just in the United States. This is a very large global issue. I've had 5 trips in Japan talking about this. I'm going back this summer to England. I'm going, we'll be presenting at the International Federation of Dental Hygiene meeting in Switzerland. This is a huge epidemic problem. So because it is such a problem, the nurse practitioner who I consult with, who's probably the number one neuro nurse practitioner in the world, realized such an importance. And if a surgeon, a amazing surgeon, does this incredible surgery in the brain and they get to the floor, the ICU floor, can you have a patient dying because the nurse did not brush their teeth? You know, that amazing surgery went for nothing. It just, you know, the patient dies. So that's why she felt it was so important to raise this issue, and their association has raised the issue. So now you know a little bit about why oral care is critical care. My job in consulting and helping was to make up a study that we could see a difference in what products were used, how did that affect the patient getting ventilator-associated pneumonia. We worked on how does the nurse look in the mouth? I mean, the most basic thing, what does the nurse do to look in the mouth? What do they see? What do they know? What's the mouth supposed to look like? What are the teeth supposed to look like? What does, you know, a plaque look like? What is mucositis, inflammation, the coated tongue, all of these things? Nurses have no clue. So my job as a consultant was to look into products, was to help in designing a study, was to teach nurses how to do oral care and oral assessments. And that went on for quite some time. And my role is still basically, I am the doctor's private consultant on product, on development, on new research. What are we going to be doing next? So that's pretty much my job. And I am very much, I say I'm an educator to the train to 20 hospitals and teach the leaders in nursing on it and no longer be the one. We have a younger hygienist who now does that. And as a hygienist, it's really important to realize we don't pick up periodontal probes. We don't pick up an Explorer. We don't pick up, a sickle, a Gracie. We don't pick up instruments. We're not scaling. We're not polishing. We're not doing varnish. We're basically assisting the nurses in bedside care and evaluating a nurse. Our hospital now, every single nurse now must do an oral care assessment, must learn how to evaluate the mouth, and the hygienist on the floor does assist with teaching the nurses. You know, there's law nurses who come and go. She will check to see if the assessment that they were taught, are they doing it correctly? And we also, 2 days a week, she is paid by two different colleges, and we have dental hygiene students who now rotate through the ICU, which is, isn't that great?
That's really fantastic.
We have nursing students who now work with hygiene students. We have medical students who now see hygiene students. So they're now part of the team. And so her job is to train the students. So the next generation, the next group of hygienists will be our leaders, which I think is great. And if the nurses must record their oral care, when they did oral care on the patient, what did they do, just like nurses have to record everything. And so our hygienist on the floor is also checking the patient's medical records. Certainly if a patient gets ventilator-associated pneumonia, the records are going to be pulled and they're going to be checked to see, did the nurses do what they're required to do now? It's not, oral care is no option. It's required of them, just like anything else in nursing care. It's a requirement.
So,
Michelle, did I answer your question?
You answered them, and you actually gave me more. So one thing that I came across when I was doing my survey, and I honestly think it was sadly the way that it happened that I wasn't able to explain that I wanted to help with oral care, not that the nurses weren't doing their job. And so my surveys came back with, no, I don't think there needs to be a hygienist. I can kind of do it myself, kind of feedback. But at the same time, I was also getting a lot of, would you know an abscess if you saw it? Would you know periodontal disease? Would you know candidiasis? Would you be able to put somebody's denture back in their mouth when it's time for them to eat? You know, those kind of things. And they weren't able, they said no, they were not comfortable doing those things. So there's a definite need. Yeah. And I do find it so strange that we are in 2016 and there's not more collaboration between oral health specialist and medical specialist. Are you finding with the years that you've been doing this that it is increasing and getting better, or is it still pretty slow?
I think it's I love the fact that we have students working together. So the new medical students, the new nursing students will think it's normal to have a hygienist in the hospital. So that's where we have to start. In different countries are different than the U.S. When I go to Japan, hygienists, nurses, they work together all the time. England, I'm there in June at a conference. I would say in the conference, a third will be nurses, a third will be hygienists, and a third in the UK are speech and language therapists. So to me, I've always said, I'm not that fussy on who does the care. I want the one to do care on me who could do the best care, who's the most knowledgeable. And when we're at the conferences in other countries, the professions are together. And I don't know why we can't do that as much here in the U.S. I'll go to a nursing conference or I'll go to a hygiene conference. We don't really sit there together. Other countries, I think, are ahead of us.
Well, I think that I think we keep hearing more and more about that. You know, as a young hygienist, and sadly, I was actually told this. I don't know if it was in my associate's or my bachelor's degree, but when I did research to only do it within the U.S., because I don't think they said it, but there was almost they were implying that the research was inadequate. And I actually saw on Facebook many months ago, and we talked about this on the podcast, that people were kind of like poo-pooing some research because it was from Europe. Like there's like it wasn't valid research. And what?
Really?
Oh, yeah. And what I hear is that I think people just don't really understand that even though we are the great and wonderful U.S., we really are not top of our game when it comes to the medical field and dental field. We really do have a lot to learn, and there are other countries that are far more progressive than we are, sadly.
I agree with you. You know, why do I go to Japan for these conferences or the UK? You know, why isn't it here in the United States? Why is it so rare for a hygienist to be in a hospital where in other countries it's really the norm? It's the norm. In Japan, it's the norm.
Exactly.
So you know, I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I wish I did.
Yeah, we probably all wish somebody had the answers. But
right.
I do wonder, so if you're doing this because you are in one of the largest critical care hospitals, correct?
Correct.
So what other states and hospitals and areas, if someone is interested in this, how do they do it? How do they go about it?
Well, number one is to, I always say, I'll get a lot of emails and I'll say, what have you read on the topic? What have you read? What have you researched? You cannot knock on a door of a hospital without knowing what you're talking about. So that's number one. I have an article, which is on how to do a nursing oral assessment. And I think that's really important. When you said, Michelle, do they know what this is? Do they know what that is? To do an oral assessment, it doesn't look at all like a dental exam, an oral exam in a dental office. It doesn't look at all like that. The scoring, they get scores. You know, it looks very different. And we base their oral care based on oral care protocol has to be done to equal what the patient's oral score was. So it's not a matter of just knowing what an aphthous ulcer is, but how does that change the patient's score, and then how does that relate to which oral care protocol they have to provide? So that's one thing I think is teaching nurses really very much what's in the mouth, how can they do an oral exam? Because they certainly can't do what you and I do. So then how to knock on doors. I think you have to go to a larger facility. You have to go, you know, you can't go to the little tiny hospital in your neighborhood if it's small. It has to be a large facility. And then if it's with a hospital system, it can expand within the system. One of the key things at our hospital is by increasing the quality of our oral hygiene products, we have also saved the hospital tons of money. Not only in products, but ventilator-associated pneumonia is very expensive to treat. $50,000 to $70,000 per case. In the new healthcare model here in the U.S., insurances, Medicare will no longer pay a hospital for a secondary infection that they believe is preventable. I always explain it like if a patient, the nurse forgot to put up the bed railing, the side on the bed, and the patient falls and breaks a leg, their insurance company is not going to pay for those that additional operation and care. It was preventable. So the same thing now with ventilator-associated pneumonia. If a nurse does not provide adequate oral care, and there's additional things to prevent this disease, but it is now considered a preventable disease, and the patient gets it, insurance, Medicare goes, too bad, hospital, you're out $50,000 to $70,000. We're not giving you that money. So is oral care life-saving? Absolutely. It's also cost-saving to a hospital. So when a hygienist is knowledgeable and can knock on a door and state, you know, if I help you prevent this condition, not only does your patient do better, does the patient live, I could save your hospital a lot of money. That's awfully important, Michelle, today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
And that's one thing that I did come across was, how do I justify my income? And pretty much, if you are preventing these nosocomial infections, you've pretty much justified your budget. But you do have to have your ducks in a row when you go looking for this as a profession. And
absolutely, Michelle.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
I think this is another great example, because I also hear a lot of people being frustrated with the amount of hygienists that are being produced from schools. And, you know, even no matter what side you take on it, I kind of feel like instead of getting frustrated with the schools producing more students, I think you should be empowered to go find some, where can you go? Like, what else could you be doing in your profession? And this is a great example of a need where hygienists could have a role and can have a role. You have a role in a hospital setting, and we have to go and open those doors for ourselves. But we have to be educated, and we have to take the initiative. And so instead of getting frustrated, I think, with some of the things that are happening in hygiene, because they're going to happen. Schools are still going to graduate students. That's not going to stop. So I think it's our next step is to start finding things that we can do that's not in the clinical set or private practice setting. So I think this is a great idea. I hope that someone does take the initiative to check it out or see what they could be doing in their city, because it's an absolute need. And I think it's the steps towards collaborating within the medical profession for sure.
And it is fun to collaborate. It's fun.
Yeah, I bet you learn and see so much that you probably never thought you would experience in your hygiene career.
Absolutely. And you learn their viewpoint. And, you know, there are a lot of things I know they don't know. And there's a lot of things they know that I don't. So
yeah.
It is a lot of fun to have your colleagues be in all different careers.
Yes.
You know, they could be a speech therapist. They could be a nurse. And you each come from a different viewpoint, but the goal is the same. You know, the goal is high-quality patient care. And, you know, I think when we work together, our patients are really the winners.
Well, and that's hopefully why all of us went into this profession, is because we wanted to care for patients. I know there are many that went into it because it's, you know, a 2-year degree and it's easy money in the sense of you get out and you get a job and you can make your hours. But I think there are a lot of us that went into it because we really do care about what we can do for the patients and making them healthier and what we can offer a patient is valuable. So I think it would be so fantastic for us to all work together to care for the patient as a whole, not just the mouth that's separated from the head, that's separated from the rest of the body.
Absolutely.
Well, Andrew, do you have any questions to add? Andrew would not do well in a hospital, I don't think.
Why not?
I don't know. I just don't feel like that's my expertise. I feel like I'm more of a, I don't know. I kind of like private practice and also corporate a little bit too much, I think.
And you know what? Irene Woodall many, many years ago was right. I was not meant to be a clinician. I was not meant to scale perio 8 millimeter pockets and furcations. Boy, was she right. So isn't that great that we could find our own place?
Yeah, that's great though. Then if someone who can scale 8 millimeter pockets or that next hygienist coming out of school who's an excellent scaler, let them do it.
Maybe. Absolutely.
Let them do it.
That's hard. Yeah. That's so hard.
Absolutely. Well, we really do appreciate you coming on. I know it was a long time coming and some illnesses on both ends here. So thank you for taking the time and sharing all of your knowledge with us today.
My pleasure, Michelle. My pleasure. Thank you both.
Now, is there anything that, how can our audience get in touch with you? Do you have websites? Do you have upcoming meetings that they can come see you?
I have a website, and it does have, you know, several articles on it, that they're welcome to download, or they can always, just drop me a note and I'll send them a couple of articles to get started. And my website is www.cindyspeaking.com.
Great. And do you have any meetings that are coming up?
Let's see. I have meetings coming up, but on this topic, I was in Virginia a month or so ago. I'm in Wisconsin in April, and in May, I'm in Long Island. I have to think which topic. I am doing it also in Long Island. So if someone wants to know more, also they could email me, cindy@cindyspeaking.com, and I'll be happy to tell them. Or they could come to the UK and hear me.
Well, yeah, Andrew, let's do that.
In the UK. I'm with Dr. Prendergast. We're there together. And then we go to Switzerland also together. And I think it's kind of nice for the audience to see two people, two professions, one passion speaking together.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And we have a lot of listeners in the UK, don't we, Andrew?
We do, yeah. We were just talking about that on the episode that posted today. And that we have, I mean, all up and down the UK, if you pull up the map of all of our listeners, there's probably 10 or 12 different little cities, I guess, or whatever.
This meeting, if they want to find out, it's June, and it's in Birmingham. And if they email me, I would be more than happy to send them information to the meeting planner to connect with them. You know, be happy to do it.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Well, we will not keep you any longer. I hope you do enjoy your night, and thank you again for coming on the podcast with us.
My pleasure. Thank you both so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.